I am hurting in particularly special, in a particularly special way. So we went to Slide Rock over the weekend. So we went up to Sedona, right? So we did the whole, like, just Red Rocks, just a change of pace.
Sure.
And
somewhere where it's not 115 degrees.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, it was still, like, I don't think we hit 100, but it was pretty close. But you're closer to the sun, so I still burn, you know, like, I'm still out there in long pants and long sleeve shirts because I'm close to the sun.
Oh, yeah. No. Again, hi.
Yep.
We've met. Yeah, no. I can get a sunburn off the reflection off snow if I'm somewhere in winter.
Oh, yeah, it's serious. But yeah, no, did Slide Rock. We were having fun, and we're at the very last slide, right? We're like, hey, let's just go down this little bit here, and then we'll pack up and leave. And I put my foot down on something that was a little too slippery. Dude, and I ate crap. Like, seriously hard. Like, I went down. Luckily, I was smart enough, somehow instinctually turned my head so I didn't hit my face. But my shoulder, my arm ended up behind me, and then I hit my knee at the same time. And I came up, and I'm like, oh, no, my arm doesn't work. Oh. Like, oh, no, my knee doesn't work. And Caitlin's like, wee! And I'm like, stop, I can't save you. I have one arm and one leg.
Oh my gosh. I'm really glad you're laughing as you tell the story so I don't have to feel bad about laughing as I hear it.
Dude, it hurts so bad. Luckily, my arm started working again, which was nice. Like,
yeah, thank goodness.
That happened pretty quick. But my knee was in bad shape. Like, it's still pretty rough. Like, if I'm walking or if I'm sitting, it's fine. But, like, going from sitting to walking, like, the transition.
Okay.
Oh, boy. It's not enjoyable. Or if I make the mistake and, like, kneel down. Yeah, I'm in bad shape. So it's. Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to say.
Yeah.
The least.
No, that sounds that sounds horrible. glad you're all right.
Yeah.
But, man.
It worked out. Yeah, it was an adventure. We'll call it that. How about that?
Yeah, let's roll with that. Something. An adventure. You know, as opposed to just labeling it self-inflicted wounds or any of those things.
It's for my kid's childhood.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Which is also why you had to pretend like it hadn't happened and like everything was totally fine.
Yep. I still had to carry the bags out and everything else, you know. So it's just dad life, man. That's what it is. It is. Oh, well. All right. Let's hit an intro. We'll jump into it. Welcome to the podcast, Blue Collar Scholars. Not long ago, a group of brilliant minds met together at a pub to discuss their unfinished works. They recognized the value of coming together around delicious beverages and having meaningful conversations. That group was known as the Inklings. The Inkledoo podcast here, we're working to be the second iteration of that group. So pour yourself a craft beverage, pull up a chair, and join the conversation. All right, man. Have you had anything good lately?
Yeah, you know, I had nothing particularly exciting or interesting. But so my dad and I, our birthdays are very close together coming up later on this month. But my folks are going to be in Denver visiting the sister, hanging out with her for a couple of weeks. So we got together and did kind of a, you know, pre-birthday dinner and hangout type of thing. And had a couple of 805s. So again, nothing like super interesting. But again, just one of those, like, a good clean lager. And man, especially just because of the way that the weather has very suddenly decided to be very, very Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
Being out by the pool with, like, a good, just kind of crisp, easy drink lager.
Yeah.
Is just a good place to be.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, it was, so nothing particularly exciting, but like it was, I haven't had one in, I don't know, it hasn't been that long really.
No, we've since brought I've it had, up a couple of times, yeah.
Yeah, it's been probably about a month or so, but I really haven't had a lager since then.
Yeah.
So like, it's clearly one of those things that's next up on my list next time I get to Kings, is make sure I throw a couple of good craft lagers in there. Because I've got to get past that mental block where I still, when I hear lager, I'm still thinking like the cheap macro brews.
Yeah.
Like I'm still thinking of, it's hard for me to spend like, you know, more than $1.50 on a can of lager, because in my head, I still have this idea of lager as something that's going to taste mostly like the can that I poured it out of.
Right. Right. Yeah. And the, I don't even know of any like, and it's hard because they are like, you have to be really intentional to appreciate a lager, because they are light and crisp, and there are some flavor notes. Like I had one from Italy one time. I was at a restaurant and I was like, oh, okay. There's like some subtle differences, but generally like the point of a lager is to be super clean. So there's not a lot of differences, you know, but still, you know, they're the ones where, what Helton used to tell us, that you can't hide, you know, brewers can't hide behind anything on a lager. So they have to do it well.
You can tell they're good at it if they can nail a lager. But yeah, that's, I'm getting ready to, move in the next week or two here. Just changing apartments basically.
Yeah.
And so like I've been, I was about to try and claim I had been productive and then realized, no, I don't want to lie this early on in the pod, but like at least mentally where my head has been at, I have not been like bringing a whole lot of things in. Mm-hmm. It's been a lot more about kind of trying to map out how I'm going to pack things up and get them out.
Right.
Because of course I'm moving when it's 115 degrees.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. Absolutely. Yeah. Does. It's always just how it works out, no matter what. Even if you try not to, that's how it works out. It's just,
I blame it a little bit on the teacher life, this idea of like, when do I have time to be moving and finding a place?
Summers.
When it's the absolute most brutal time to do it.
That's absolutely true. Yeah, for me, I actually had a similar, so when we were up in Sedona, the little hotel we were at had a little bar with a little happy hour, and everything was little because it was actually a small hotel, but it was, they had four local brews on there, and they had church music from the shop. Okay.
Yeah.
And again, yeah, we were sitting by the pool for, you know, we were wasting time basically. So got one of those and we sat by the pool and the girls were swimming and it was, you know, hot and sunny, but not terrible in the shade, and with a church music IPA. And that was nice, man. And that's a good IPA because it's still got some stank to it. Like it's still a little punchy, you know, like it's bitter, but it's balanced. And so it's not just like a fruit juice IPA, but it is still, it's still hazy. It's still real juicy. It's still real tropical, but it's still got some hoppy bitterness in there, that like some real strong hop flavor in there.
Yeah, that was one of the first kind of local beers that I heard get attention, like, consistently.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, from Phoenix specifically, because there's, I think it was like Nimbus down in Tucson that had a couple that I heard people speaking nice things about. But yeah, that shop music was one of the first, the church music from
the shop,
I mean, was like one of the first ones that people seemed to be recognizing that Phoenix was doing some things.
Yeah. Yeah. They're good. I'm not going to lie. I've only been down there twice and yeah, I like them. They have a cool story too, just being similar to, they started with a coffee company and then moved over to beer brewing and just kind of a cool story. While we were up in Sedona, it was interesting. So we did the day trip to Sedona, and on the way home, we went through Jerome. Have you ever been there?
Yeah, that's a really cool little town.
Yeah. I'll say, yeah. That's what I'll say. Because I remembered it being, you know, it's a ghost town, an old mining town. But like when we were there this weekend, like it was really macabre. Like, I mean, everything was devils and death and ghosts, and like the whole town now is it like all the shops are all about, you know, or I guess if it's not about skeletons and death, then it was about some form of sacrilege. And if it wasn't about one of those two things, it was about crystals. Because again, you're up there, you're near Sedona, so you got to have crystals. But like, it was more than I remembered. And maybe I just didn't remember it well. But like,
it might be like, so it's been, I was just trying to think in my head now, and here's another one of those things where you can tell you're getting old. Everything seems like it was just a couple years ago. And then as I'm doing the math, I'm like, oh, no, that was probably about 4 or 5 years ago was the last time I was up there.
Now, that's still ghost towns don't change a whole lot, you know.
Well, no, that's true. But like, I feel like one of the things that so I noticed that when I was up there, I was visiting actually a buddy who was still a seminarian at the time. Now he's a priest with a couple other friends who are also Catholic. And so like we went up, he was in Cottonwood actually. And then we just sort of kept going a little ways up to Jerome. And when we were hanging out, it was one of those things where like there were pockets, like there were things that are just like the actual town where there's not a ton going on.
Right. And it's on the side of the mountain. Yeah.
And then there's the but yeah, you're right. Actually, most of the restaurants had some kind of either like ghost or skeleton, or there was some kind of like the idea of it being a haunted place is definitely the marketing. Right. No doubt about
it. Yeah. And there was some more, like there was like some art pieces and stuff that I feel like maybe I missed before, but I don't know. And then also, I mean, like you got Maynard from Tool, you know, like that guy is like set up shop in there. So you're like, you know, it's not necessarily like, it's not going to be like wholesome home if Maynard is like selling his wine there. Like that. So, but anyway, but the thing was just like, I've kind of been, and full transparency, it could be me because like, I might be like triggered on this stuff because I picked up a book from college. I've had it for however long since I've graduated college, 2008 or whatever. So I've had it for a long time. So myself, I was like, I'm gonna
decade read and this. A half.
This
yeah,
is super interesting. I want to read this book, and I just now picked it up, and it's on witchcraft from 400 to 1700 or something like that. So like, it's just kind of like the span. It's like witchcraft in Europe, basically.
Okay,
and it's. I kept it because like one of my crowning achievements of my college education was justifying the burning of witches, right? Like I actually got my teacher to give me an A. We talked about this.
I remember that. Yeah.
And she's like, that's a good point. And I was like, thank you very much.
I'm not saying they were right. I'm saying if they were right about witches, they would be right about burning them.
I'm just saying.
Yeah. Like they were just being consistent with their beliefs.
Yeah.
And I if you believe that,
I think that was the foundation of my argument is that, yeah. So, but so I finally picked it up and it's been interesting to say the least, right? Like, and when you dig into this stuff, like you can't help but be like, anytime you're focusing on a particular topic, you're going to be triggered. You're going to be looking, you're going to notice it more in the world than you've
ever noticed.
It's
at the front of your mind.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, everything that connects to it stands out more. No doubt about it.
Yeah. And so like one of the pieces in the introduction that I thought was really interesting was the progression of Satan and in this stuff. And like, I always get weird about this stuff because it's like, whenever you like, you know, is it like Candyman? If I say it three times, is he going to show up and like poof in the middle of the podcast and have to exercise him out of my bedroom? Like I'm not interested in that, but it is an interesting topic and the way that they presented it. Cause I like this book particularly because most of them in college, it was like, I can't ever think of the word anthropology, right? Mm-hmm. That's like the study of humans.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The study of the human person, what humanity is. Yeah.
So most of them look at it like that. So they like strip all the spiritual relevance out of it. And it just like, oh, these are humans trying to make sense of a crazy world. And they kind of take that out. And so they legitimately address it like this is what people really believe and they're not discounting it. And so they're like looking at the literature and all of these things and then the history and how it progressed. And the history of Satan was super interesting to me because I don't think I ever realized that it changed. Like, I always thought that we had had the same image of him throughout our history, but we really haven't. And so I kind of wanted to lay out the history and then just be like, I don't know, see what you think about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so it was, starting out, one of the things that I found the most interesting was that the early church didn't give him a lot of credit. Like, they weren't worried about him. They weren't thinking about him. They weren't, like, doing all this. Like, he was, like, in the book of Job, still a servant, like an unwilling servant of God, a tool of God. How about that? Instead of a servant, because he's not willingly.
No, I like the phrasing of an unwilling servant. I like that a lot, because that acknowledges that, like, he's trying to go against him, but it doesn't really matter.
But it's
like,
all
he doesn't actually have the power to be a threat.
Right. And it's all under God's sovereign will.
Exactly. Like, God continues to bring these good things out of every time that, like, Satan thinks he's gotten a step forward. God's like, actually, you just took 5 steps back, because here's how I'm going to use this.
Right. But at the same time, also, God willed the pain on Job.
Right.
Like, or permitted.
Yes.
Permitted the testing. It
his permissive will.
But I mean, like, it's still like, it's not like he didn't.
God could have stopped it.
He didn't. It's not like he didn't know that's what Satan was going to do, you know? So.
God could have stopped it. God was aware it was happening.
Yeah.
And God allowed it.
Right. And so that's kind of how they saw it, is that, like, whatever he was basically doing it the will of God, because God was willing it. And then we get into one of the primary issues that the early church had, which was dualism, right? Mm-hmm. And basically theirs was that, you know, their good and evil were equal, fighting each other. And that was Augustine and the Manichaeans, right? Mm-hmm. That was the big battle. Augustine wins, obviously, right?
Yeah.
But what was interesting is that the dualistic impression of evil stuck around. So, like, and this got my brain churning. I was like, well, that makes sense, because every time you interact with the other, you're different. You know, like, every time we have a conversation, you're different. I'm different.
Yeah.
Because we're interacting absolutely with something that's not ourselves. Right. And so the church actually changed a little bit in its battle with dualism. And one of those was the image of Satan, who, instead of being kind of a folky, kind of an imp, almost like a troublemaker or a trickster, or would it be compared to, type of a thing, but not like a physical dangerous threat, becomes an equal, like a power to be reckoned with. Like, now he is powerful. He's not just like this little trickster thing that you know, pulls on your hem and gets you to do stuff. Like, he's a legit threat. He's a power, because that's what the impact that dualism had on it.
I think that's largely accurate. I think to me, the thing that, like, as I was reading over the notes and everything, one of the things that kind of stands out to me is that I think a lot of what happens is that there is, over the course of history, there's a shift in perspective in terms of how we're evaluating Satan. Mm-hmm. You know, so, like, in the early church, they're evaluating Satan and his threat compared to God and his promise and God's mm-hmm. power and what God's capable of.
Mm-hmm.
And so they very accurately come to the conclusion, well, he isn't one.
Right. Right.
Like, a battle between God and Satan is not actually a reality, because there's no battle. In the same way that, like, a fifth grade basketball team playing the defending champion Denver Nuggets is not really a basketball game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they might be able to get out on the court, but that's literally as far as the competition goes.
Right.
And then I think what we see when we get to, like, the stuff with Augustine and his battle with the Manichaeans, is that we see this shift kind of because of the dualist's perspective was about, like, whether he's a threat to us. And so, like, in the responses to that, which Augustine, he won because he was right.
Right.
And so, like, I'm not arguing against any of what St. Augustine said in response to the duelist, or even in terms of what a lot of the people after him said.
Right.
What they said was right, but it's shifted the perspective now.
Right.
To where now we're not evaluating Satan as he would compare to the power of God. We're comparing Satan as he compares to the power of us.
Mm.
And if we're doing that, oh yeah, now he's a threat.
Right. That's interesting. Yeah. And that makes, you know, that makes me think of is like Screwtape's like 1 degree difference.
Yes.
And it plays out because like, as we go on to the next stages of this, like you just see, because this is the beauty of looking back at history, is that you can see the 1 degree difference because it plays out and becomes huge over a millennia. 1,000 years, you know?
Yeah.
Exactly. Because the next step is Aquinas, and Aquinas is tasked with like systematizing everything. And so it goes from the devil being just like, now he's a power, but still kind of like a folk thing that's running around in the villages, to now he's a hierarchical enemy, right? So like there's a hierarchy of hell, similarly to a hierarchy. So now you have Satan at top, and you have these sub-demons, so there's a hierarchy of power, and you have, you know, like the kingdom of, you know, like Jesus is accused, you know, how can I cast out demons if, you know, by the name of Beelzebub, if, you know, a kingdom against
talking
itself.
Talking about a kingdom divided against itself and all that, yeah.
So now you have Satan is like this hierarchy, he's powerful, and he's structured. So now he's mimicking human structures, which is interesting that you pointed out, because I hadn't made that connection. I was just looking at the progression over time,
and also keeping in mind that like those human structures are mimicking heavenly structures, you know, in terms of that idea of like God, the choirs of angels, like there is some of that in there as well, where like, which again, from the systematic approach, like, oh yeah, you know, again, Satan can't create because he's not God. He doesn't have that power. So instead, it's about those like imitations, those 1 degree off imitations that happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is actually, so from that point, because Aquinas is like around 1,000, right? Or 1,100.
Yeah. 1,100, somewhere around there.
So That is kind of like the height of, for my book, which is focused on witchcraft, that's kind of the height of like witchcraft, and that's where people are really like, there's a lot of writings from bishops addressing soothsayers and all of this stuff. And then the next big evolution, the big jump, which isn't until like 1600, is skepticism comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And so doubt, and people are starting to say like, this stuff's not real. Like there's no witches. Like you get real skepticism, and then you're starting to get scientific advancements, and you're starting to get humanism, and all of these different things are coming up. And what happens is everything becomes skeptical, and then art comes in, and art comes in and starts enhancing the devil, right? Like you get Faust and the deal with the devil, you know, like you get those stories coming around that time. And so they start like emphasizing the devil and his power. And then they similarly, art is emphasizing the suffering Christ instead of, so simultaneously we have a change in the perspective of the devil. So now he's like this devouring lion that is, you know, after humans and doing all kinds of things, making deals to take your soul, and he's outsmarting you, and he's better in every way. Simultaneously, the church has a change in God being, instead of being like the all-powerful judge, to becoming the suffering Christ for you, who is kind of constantly plagued by this lion that is pursuing you. And right, and without the suffering Christ and the ministry of the church, so like there's this really big change in perspective, again, both on Satan and on the Christian view of God.
And I think a lot of it, though, the danger can be to look at things too progressively in terms of history as like a straight line that's happening.
Right.
Because, you know.
No, that's like 400 years. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No. Absolutely. Yeah. But not just that, but also in terms of, you know, so like you mentioned the idea of how the early church viewed Satan. But then you quoted St. Peter in one of his letters talking about your enemy, the devil, is prowling like a roaring lion seeking to devour. So, like, both of these concepts have always been there, you know? Like, yeah, you've got the account of Job, but you also have in Judges and Kings and Samuel all of these references to, again, the soothsayers, those who are communing with the spirits of the dead and the dangers of this and it having to be outlawed and all of this. And so, like, they've both been present, but again, it kind of comes back to that, where is the emphasis at? Because, yeah, it, both are true that Christ is the almighty victor who has triumphed over all things. He did that through his suffering. And so there's, I think...
Do you think, had the same knowledge, though? Like, do you think the people that were in, like, because, I mean, like, the Bible wasn't widely available or translated in those early, in the Middle Ages, was it?
The Bible would have most likely still been primarily in Latin. And so you would have heard, like, homilies and preachings in your native tongue, but the actual readings probably not super widespread. Okay. But what I'm saying is, like, again, I think it's entirely accurate and worthwhile to look at kind of the historical shifts in where these perspectives and these emphases are happening, because they tell us a lot about what the struggles were at the time. You know, like you said, I don't think it's a coincidence that at the time when things like witchcraft and temptations of that sort are really flourishing amongst the people, that there's also this big push to look at, like, no. You don't need to make those deals. You don't need his help, because Christ has already endured and paid the price for you on the cross. Your victory has been bought already through what he's done.
Yeah.
As opposed to, I guess, so my whole thing is just this idea that, like,
No, I think there's a representative piece there, like, where it's representing what they're struggling with. And I think what I want to add on to that is that I also think it represents a little bit of what they're struggling against at the time, right? So, like, the perspective, Definitely. So, like, Augustine is struggling against the Manichaeans. Yes. Aquinas is struggling against, probably everybody at that time.
Well, so at that point, it was a lot of...
but it was just, like, struggling against a diaspora of a church, basically, right? Like, we sort of to kind of pull well it together,
and that, and also the fact that, you know, it was a much smaller scale version of kind of like watching the church try and exist in the modern age, like once social media and email and stuff like that was becoming popular, because similarly around the time of Aquinas, things have started to settle enough and we're now in contact with the Muslim world on like on an actual communicative level, where it's not just the Crusades.
Right.
But like, that's where a lot of the stuff is coming from. And so you're right. Yeah. Having to try and be like, okay, cool. Here are a million other thoughts that are being presented to us. Which of those are like pieces of truth that like help clarify what we already know about who God is and what we've been handed? And what's the stuff that's like, this sounds real nice. But if you think about it for another 30 seconds, you're going to see where the problems lie.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause my thought is, and one of my last thoughts on this is that like, it's like what they're struggling against and how they're viewing Satan, and kind of, we had somebody at the church recently talk about their evangelism in Europe. And how Europe is basically like the most atheistic place in the world right now. And he said Germany is like 99.6% atheist, and or something like 96% atheist, something where it was like the vast, very vast majority of it.
Yeah.
And my thought in a lot of that, as it came to that kind of that conclusion where, you know, the devil seemed to be being heightened and the suffering of Christ was being focused on, like those two things, and I'm like, I wonder if there's something to this vision of evil that challenges our faith, that kind of like, or just that this progression in Europe where evil continued to rise and Christ kind of continued to be minimized, and now we're stuck in this place where we had the execution of all the Jews, and now everybody's an atheist.
I mean,
like, is there some connection, you think?
I don't think I can say that they're not connected. I mean, I don't feel comfortable saying, like, at this point, because, like, that's a really profound statement, and one that, like, it's like, ooh, I think there's something to that. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, I got no proof, but...
No, but I mean, like, well, but to a certain extent, you do, because you are right. Like, the First World War was the war to end all wars for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then World War II happened. Like, if you want to imagine the most horrific time travel conversation you could possibly imagine, go back to, like, I don't know, 1928 in Europe and be talking to someone about, like, oh, man, that's right, you guys just went through World War One, huh?
Yeah.
And, like, wait. World War One?
Yeah.
No. That suggests sequels. Oh, yeah. Yeah, my friend. And so, like, I do think there is definitely something to that. But I also think, part of it is that we have a tendency to get very focused on whatever our view is until something massive shakes it.
Right.
You know, yeah. Like when you look at these, going back to that, like, what are they arguing against? You know, what leads to the shift? Augustine. Having to talk to them, having to resolve things with the Manichaeans.
Yeah.
What leads to the shift? Aquinas having to confront all of these other systems. But at the same time, I don't know, man. I think it would be too simplistic to say that's what it is.
Right.
As opposed to saying that's part of what's going
part
on.
Part of the, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And I think if I was going to pull all this into a life lesson here, it's just, I think I was posting on our social media from our heretics conversations like months ago, and just that it's important to know what we believe and how we came to believe it. Like, again, last week we said church history matters. Like, this is another example, you know, like our church beliefs have changed. And again, we've been in conflict with different ideas, and understanding how those ideas have changed us over time, I think is important. And it's also rich, right? Like people groups like love their heritage because that heritage struggled to have the identity that they have, right? That's part of the richness of being a Christian. We have 2,000 years of struggling history on top of a Jewish tradition that goes back way more than that, right? So there's a richness to knowing this history, and it makes your faith so much more enjoyable. Enjoyable is not the right word, but if I said rich one more time, like, the sentence was just going to be
fulfilling.
Fulfilling, like, better word. Yes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And kind of building off of that, like, for me, that's where, again, we kept talking about how these perspectives and these emphases have shifted. It's so important to know the whole story, because that's the counterbalance. Like, Augustine dealing with the Manichaeans didn't cause Augustine to view Satan as a threat to God's divine plan.
Right.
Why? Because Augustine knew the whole package of what he was working with.
Yep.
And Augustine could talk about, Satan is a threat to me. I'm not as smart as he is. He's an angelic being. He knows more than me. So, yeah, he's a threat to me if I pull myself away from God, which is why I'm not going to do that.
Right.
Same with Aquinas. Like, he's able to talk about these, like, powers of hell and able to list out, like, what powers they have. And for him, he's not viewing them as a threat because, yeah, their powers fit in these boxes.
Yep.
As opposed to God, who goes beyond all boxes and all containment. He's not actually a threat. He's worth knowing about because, those pranks that he does possibly put our souls at risk if we if we go along with him too much.
Yep.
So, yeah, we need to know.
Yep.
But they had that perspective of the whole picture, which allowed them to, like, acknowledge and respond.
Yeah.
And that's what's so crucial for us, is that we don't lose sight of it. You know, even C.S. Lewis in the Screwtape Letters talks about that idea. Like one of the things when Screwtape's nephew, Wormwood, mm-hmm. is like considering, like things are going so well with this guy. And so he's like considering, do I reveal myself? Do I show myself like we used to back in the Middle Ages? And Screwtape's advice is, hey, you know, we found that really effective back then. But with the modern man, we find these temptations, these subtle ones, yeah. work a lot better.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's important to know, like, the whole package. Because yeah. otherwise, that's what the pranksters, those demonic powers, such as they are, that's what they're looking for. Is where do we have a shaky foundation? You know, it's kind of like... when you were walking in line as a little kid in grade school, actually, I'm going to say when I was walking in line, because I don't want to assume everyone else was doing this kind of evil stuff. But you know how, like, you could try and give someone a flat tire at just about any point?
That's what I was just thinking about, yeah.
But that's not what you're doing. You're not doing it at any point. You're waiting. You're waiting. When are they so focused on the conversation that they're not supposed to be having in line that I can really get them now?
Yeah.
Or, ooh, this person's shoe is like not really tied. They've got the skater shoes on with like the laces that are just there for decoration. I can get this person's leaving his shoe behind if I get him. And like, that's kind of what it is we need to know the whole package so that we are ready to respond to all of it and constantly Agreed. Growing closer to God.
Agreed. And that's one of the things that, cause we're going to, there's some good topics that come out of this. Oh, yeah. And that's one of the things that I'll have to remember as I'm reading is that this is one side of the story. There's an Orthodox conversation that's happening simultaneous with these other conversations that these bishops are having and things like that. So, but one thing that you don't have to worry about is that the Capuchins worked with the Pope and got coffee sanctified. So coffee is actually a blessed beverage. This was a long time ago because they didn't want the Muslims to have it. So it is an approved drink.
Didn't want them to have the monopoly.
The exclusive rights to it.
Yeah, there you go. I was going to say, it wasn't about trying to deny our Muslim brothers and sisters.
Oh, it coffee. Absolutely was. Let's be.
No, it was trying to make sure that we didn't have to buy it from them. Oh, but
that's probably fair, too. But you do have to buy it from us, unfortunately. And that's how you support our meaningful conversations. So hop on that website, grab some coffee. I'd love to roast you some fresh stuff, get you some good conversations, good cup of coffee. Got you on that one.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. No, I'm crying a little bit.
That's fantastic. All right. With that, everybody, we will say
adieu.